Hello, welcome back. And what we're going to talk about in this session is beliefs. And we're going to talk about the belief system loop and how beliefs affect behavior and affect results and what we can do about those results if we don't get the results that we want. So we remember in the last session we talked about perception and reality and the way that you think and how that's affected by education, friends, family, experiences generally, and so on. Well, we're going to take this a stage further now. So here we are. This is the belief systems loop, and we have lots of these belief systems loops running around in our head. There isn't just one of them. And the first bit, of course, is our mind or the way that we think. And we talked about how that's affected by culture, school, religion, family, friends, and so on and so on. The way that you think determines your beliefs. So you will have beliefs about the world, and a lot of them will be at a kind of unconscious level. You might not even be aware that you believe these things, but they are there. And as I said in an earlier session, that most of our beliefs and values are formed by the time we're seven. So if I heard, as I did, my dad coming home from ICI every day where he worked, saying, "God, the managers in that place, they couldn't organize a fill the rest in yourself," I could quite easily grow up with the beliefs that all managers are idiots, because that's what I've been hearing every day. And beliefs affect your values. So values are things that are important to you. So things that you value about the world around us. I'm not talking physical things, but your values are things that are important to you. So they're usually attached to a belief. So for instance, if I believe that all managers are idiots, I probably don't value management very highly. They're quite low on my hierarchy, because you will probably have a hierarchy of values where some things are more important to you than others. So, for example, it may be that family is more important than work, or having fun is more important than anything else, whatever it may be. But on my values hierarchy, where I believe that all managers are idiots, I probably value them quite low and me quite high. And the thing about your perception, your beliefs, and your values is that they form your behavior. So they inform and affect and create your behavior. So we tend to behave in an unconscious way based on the beliefs and values. So for example, I believe all managers are idiots. I value them very low on my hierarchy. So in terms of behavior, I'm probably quite negative, confrontational, undermining, aggressive, just generally not reacting favorably to management within the organization. You may know people like this, or you may not, and I hope you don't. Because the thing about behaviors is behaviors always get results. So if I believe all managers are idiots and I value them very low, and I behave in a constructive, negative, antagonistic, and generally confrontational way, the results for me could be that I get passed over for promotion, or I lose my job. And as I'm walking out of the building with my P45 in my hand, or I get that letter saying I haven't got that promotion again, what's going through my mind? Yeah, something along the lines of, I'm good at my job and they've sacked me. Therefore, they must be idiots. So the results that we get kind of reinforce the beliefs that we've got. So it's an interesting kind of way of looking at this, that we're saying that unconsciously we choose the behavior to create the results that reinforce the beliefs that we've got. And that's an interesting way of looking at things, because I'm not saying this is a conscious choice. We unconsciously choose behaviors so that we react to a certain situation. And it's not all bad, of course. I could believe that everybody has unlimited potential. I could value learning above everything else. And maybe behavior is I get a job like this. And perhaps the results are that sometimes people come up to me and say, "God, that course changed my life, hopefully for the better." And in fact, we did a word search on the NLP practitioner course over the years, and the word that came out most from the feedback was life-changing. And so for me, having that kind of feedback reinforces the belief that everybody has got unlimited potential and that learning is really, really important. So the question here is, What if you're not getting the results that you want? If you're not getting the results that you want, then we need to change something. We need to break that cycle. And if you think about it logically, then, you know, certain results, certain behavior, certain results. So if you can change your behavior, you'll get different results. Behavior results, different behavior, different results. Make sense? Yeah, of course it does. Well, how many of you, or have you ever made New Year's resolutions? Do you make New Year's resolutions? And if you don't, why not? And generally, people tell me that they don't make New Year's resolutions because they never stick to them. And what you're doing when you make a New Year's resolution is you're making a conscious decision to change based on something that makes sense to you. So I suppose the classics are to give up smoking, to lose weight, to get fit, to stop drinking, although that's usually the first one when you wake up on New Year's Day. And they're all logical things that make sense, because it makes sense to stop smoking. We know that. It makes sense to get fit. And so we make those New Year's resolutions and we decide that we're going to do those things. And the problem is that that's okay as long as we can consciously focus on the behavior. Because as soon as we stop focusing on the behavior, because nothing's changed at an unconscious level, then everything goes back to the way it was, or near to the way it was. So you find yourself after a few days standing outside the building with a cigarette in your hand after you decided New Year's resolution to stop smoking, because it makes sense. And, you know, we have clients who are gyms, and they will say that, you know, you can never get in through the door of a gym in January because people are constantly, you know, buying new gym memberships. And I guess it's one of the reasons why gyms ask you to pay by standing order. I know one person, a friend of mine, who once spent £900 on a swim because he only ever went there once, but he was going out on a standing order way. And it's not just New Year's resolutions, though. You might make a decision to make a change, like on this course, for instance. You might decide you're going to do things differently. And that's okay to make that conscious decision. The problem is that when you get back to work, and we had a manager when I used to work in manufacturing who would come back from a course and say, right, something like, okay, we're going to have daily production meetings from now on. And we'd be like, oh yeah, been on a course, have you? And sure enough, within a couple of weeks, production pressures would have meant that we'd gone back to the way that we were. So the implication here is that whenever people are under stress, they revert back to their old behavior. And we say in NLP that all learning and change to be permanent has to take place at an unconscious level. So if you want your change to be permanent, you have to change something in the values, the beliefs, or the perception level for it to be permanent. So let's take beliefs. Now, I'm a lazy person. I'm not idle. I work really hard, but I'm lazy. And I'm happy to be lazy, since I read somebody said that if you want to find the best way to do something, ask a lazy person, because they'll find the easiest way to do it. And I'm really happy with that. And to me, constantly focusing on my behavior and my behavioral change is difficult. It's hard work. So if I can change something once and put the effort in once, and that has a permanent change, then happy days, I'll definitely look for that. So if you can change a belief, then different belief, different values, different behavior, different results. Make sense? So is it possible, though, to change a core belief? Is it possible to have a belief that you've had for a long time and then change it? So let me ask you a question. Did you believe in Father Christmas when you were a kid? Do you believe in Father Christmas now? If you do, I would skip the next 10, 15 seconds of the program. Because I used to believe in Father Christmas heart and soul, to the extent that on Christmas Eve, I used to hallucinate sleigh bells. I used to hear sleigh bells. And the results were really happy day. Christmas was fantastic. So I used to believe heart and soul. And also we used to send letters to Father Christmas up the chimney. So we'd write the letter, we'd put it in the chimney, and the heat from the fire would take it up the chimney. And my dad would say, run to the front door and see if you can see it flying to the North Pole. So I used to run to the front door. And every year I used to see it flying across the sky, sparks trailing from it as it headed towards the North Pole. And as I said before, the results the following day were always fantastic Christmases. Until I was 7 years old, I was in a playground at school, and Michael Morris said to me, and I'm not bitter about this, you understand? Michael Morris said to me, it's not true, you know. I said, what's not true? He said, this Father Christmas thing, it's not true. I said, yeah, of course it is. He said, no, it's not. He said, think about it, right? There's this big fat bloke who can get down your chimney. I'm like, well, you know, he could kind of squeeze up a bit and wriggle his way down. And he said, he can get a bike down the chimney. And I'm like, oh, yeah. Little chimney, big bike. The logic of his argument started to affect me. And he said, you can get to every house in the world in one night. And that's where he really had me, because, you know, we used to live in the north of England, and to get down to Cornwall on holiday used to take us a long time. And by the time you get into 7 years old, you're starting to realize that the world is a bigger place than you thought it was. So the logic of his argument undermined the belief I had that Father Christmas existed. So what we're saying here is that I can't change your beliefs. You can't change other people's beliefs. But what you can do is you can influence them. And you can influence them with information. You can provide them with information that affects their perception of the world, which undermines the belief that they've got, and then will affect values, behavior, and results. And what's another word for information on the results of somebody's behavior? So if you give somebody information about the results of their behavior, what are you giving them? Yeah, you're giving them feedback. And this is why I think feedback is so important, because it's the only way that you can influence somebody else's behavior. So for example, I know managers who behave in a particular way, because how do managers learn to manage? Well, most of the time they learn by watching other managers, by being managed themselves, because most managers don't go on management development programs before they become managers. In fact, lots of them don't go on management development programs after they become managers. I had one guy on a course once, we're doing a leadership program, and he said, I don't know why I'm here. He said, I've been a manager for 30 years, and if they told me I wasn't any good, they'd have told me by now. I'd know by now. And at the end of the course, he said, I wish I'd done this course 30 years ago. Because the feedback he got and he gave himself from the information that he was getting on the course was undermining the belief that, you know, you had to be a particular autocratic, angry, aggressive, just do it a manager, and that there were different approaches. And I've seen managers like that change their behavior like this because they've had one piece of feedback. Because they believe that that's how you need to behave as a manager. And when that feedback changes, the belief changes, so their behavior changes. Now, it's not a guarantee that's going to happen. There's a classic story of a psychiatrist who had a patient who believed he was a corpse. And because he believed he was dead, he didn't eat or drink, because you don't when you're dead. And what are the results of that likely to be? Yeah. And perhaps as he was about to shuffle off this mortal coil, he might have said, oh yeah, I was right, but it's sort of too late by then. So the psychiatrist, knowing that what he needed to do was provide him with information that undermined the belief that he was dead, because the thing about beliefs is that beliefs are irrational. You know, they exist in your unconscious, and we've already established that your conscious is the rational part of your mind. The unconscious reacts and is irrational in lots of different ways. So he needed to undermine this irrational belief that the guy was dead, because clearly he wasn't. And so, knowing that he needed to do that, he walked up to the patient and said, okay, so you're dead. Yes, and the patient replied, well, do corpses bleed? And the patient said, well, no, of course not. So the psychiatrist pulled a hypodermic out and jabbed it into the back of the patient's hand, and of course blood started to flow from his hand, and the patient looked at this, his hand with the blood running down it. Psychiatrist stood back smugly, arms folded, waiting for him to say, "I'm bleeding, corpses don't bleed, therefore I must be alive, can I have a bacon sandwich?" When the patient looked at his hand and said, "Whoa, corpses do bleed." So the point of this is that people go round and round this loop so many times and have their beliefs reinforced so many times in so many ways that it's very difficult for us to find the right information delivered in the right way at the right time to make a difference. And there are only two ways that information can get into the unconscious to create a permanent change. One is through trauma. And trauma isn't always necessarily negative, although, you know, if as a baby you're lying in a pram and you wake up with a spider running across your face, there's a good chance that you're going to grow up with a fear of spiders, which may become a phobia of spiders. If, on the other hand, you have a significant emotional event, that it may be something happens on a course like this, maybe somebody says something or you hear something or you read something that makes you go, "Oh, wow, that can change the way you think forever," because it will change that belief. It's that significant emotional event, as therapists call it, which can be positive or negative, but it just has that significance that's important. So it can happen through a blinding light on the road to Damascus or a trauma. The second way that information gets into your unconscious to make a permanent change is through repetition. And, you know, you've heard the phrase practice makes perfect, and it is about repeatedly practicing things. But at the same time, if you're constantly told that you're stupid as a child, there's a very good chance that you're going to grow up believing that you are stupid. And because you believe you're stupid, you behave in stupid ways and you get results that reinforce your belief. When I was about 11 years old, I was told many times by my maths teacher that I would never pass a maths O-level. And when I took the O-level at 15, I got a D, which back in the day was deemed to be a fail. I took it again in the October and I got an E, which was even worse, as you can imagine. And then I put lots of effort in, did lots of past papers. My parents paid for external maths tuition. I had extra lessons at school, and I took it again the following June and I got a U, unclassified. And I remember walking out of the hall where I got the result thinking, "Do you know, that's fantastic, because I never need to do that again. I've proved that I'm never going to pass a maths O level." And then a few years later, when I was doing an HNC in chemistry, we did a module on analytical maths, which was a much higher standard, much harder than the O level. And I got a distinction in it, which was more than 85% at the time. But I bet if I did a maths O level now, I still wouldn't pass it, because I've got that belief through that repetition. So that internal dialogue that you use is really important. And so is the feedback, whether that's feedback you give other people or it's feedback you give yourself. So the more feedback you give people, the more chance you've got to hit them at the right time to get that permanent change. Because, you know, there's a joke about therapists, which is, how many therapists does it take to change a light bulb? And the answer is only one, but the light bulb has got to really want to change. So giving people feedback at the right time is important, and so is giving people feedback in the right way. And there are various ways of giving non-judgmental feedback that are really, really helpful. But the more feedback you give people, the more chance they've got to change. So although I said that just changing behavior isn't going to lead to a permanent change, and when you find yourself under pressure, you're going to revert back to the way that you behaved before, there's also a reality which says that if you choose to change your behavior from doing this course, for example, but you give yourself feedback, then that's going to make a big difference. So constantly practicing what it is that you're learning is going to be helpful, but so is giving feedback, getting feedback. And who's the best person to give you feedback? You are. which is one of the reasons that I ask you to do a learning log, because the learning log is all about reflecting on what you've learned, how you've tried to apply it, and what results you've got. So giving yourself feedback on that change in behavior is more likely to lead to a permanent change, because you're undermining that belief that you've got. And fundamentally, I believe that the influencing we're doing through NLP is all about attempting to influence the beliefs that people have, to help them change their beliefs. Now, that belief might be a life-limiting belief, which is, if I go out through the door, I will get hit by a car and I'll die, so I'll stay in. Or it could be as simple as changing a belief from, I'm not buying that, to a belief that I am going to buy it. And so everything that we do in NLP is about helping people move from the state they're in now, their present state, to where they want to be, which is their desired state, and where we want them to be, because this is all about a win-win approach. And in the next session, we're going to start to think about how we do that. So how we communicate. What modes do we use to communicate? What's the best way to get the message across to people? And the next section of the course is really all about influencing other people in that kind of top level way. And we're going into more detail as we go on through the course. So I hope you found this useful and thought-provoking. And I look forward to seeing you next time.